Welcome to episode number 14 of the Zach Kuhn Show. Here we go. My guest today, actually, this is a pretty incredible guest. My guest today is Graham Winder, the founder and CEO of a company called Keys and Kingdoms. What is Keys and Kingdoms? I'm going to tell you. Keys and Kingdoms is a video game company that is changing the way kids learn music. Get this. Graham, he was a music teacher on the West Coast, and he was frustrated with the lack of options for teaching music. Basically, if you weren't a great sight reader, it was really hard for you to learn, and he thought that shouldn't be. So he decides to create a video game that is as addicting and as fun as Zelda or Fortnite, and then he bakes in all this music education stuff on top. Crazy. And then you find out that the head of Guitar Hero, you know, like Guitar Hero, like the biggest video game ever. Well, the founder of Guitar Hero has been advising Graham every step of the way. This is an incredible episode and such a cool product that I wish I had growing up when I was learning music. And I think the biggest thing that I took away from Graham was his passion for music education, and that you can't teach all kids the same. Kids learn differently, and you have to teach them differently. And that's what he's on a mission to solve, basically. This video game learns how you learn, and it teaches you how you learn, which to me is such a cool concept, such a cool idea. It makes so much sense. Okay, I'm done talking. Let's dive in.
Well, first of all, I'm in my sister's room, so forgive all the pink. But it's a great
color. I like pink.
Pink's a great color, but I was like, there's a chandelier up here. I mean, it could be my childhood room, but it's my sister's bedroom. Someone's in my room working. It's like nothing makes any sense anymore in the age of COVID.
That's right. That's so true.
But I'm so excited to dive in and talk about this. I mean, you know, kind of like what you were saying. I mean, I feel like I jumped from several different instruments. I started on piano. I then picked up violin, picked up saxophone, picked up guitar, and it was all over. And I think the interesting thing is, I think if people knew how much time I spent practicing guitar, they would think I would be a much better guitar player than I currently am. And I think I'm like a proficient guitar player, but I don't think people realize, like, and some of my friends, like I remember being in high school and a buddy of mine, I was in 10th grade and I'd been playing guitar for like 5 years already at that point. And a buddy of mine picked up the guitar, and in 6 months, he was like shredding Eric Johnson, which was like something I could never figure out. And he seemed to pick it up so much faster than I ever picked it up. I'm kind of curious, because you said you were struggling. Where does music education go wrong today? Like, where are music educators lacking, or where are they not getting it?
Okay, so I'll start back in the beginning, where I'm a five-year-old boy. I'm living in an apartment. I'm a single parent. And the people in the next apartment were moving and didn't want to move their little spinet upright piano, so they just gave it to us. And I'm five at the time, so I go over to this weird looking thing that's in our apartment now, and I just start hitting the keys, and I'm like, it just instantly, I'm enamored with it. I'm like, this is amazing. So my mom said, you know, yeah, would you like to get lessons or learn how to play? I'm like, absolutely. So our local church organist, you know, became my first teacher. And what I didn't realize I was doing at the time in these lessons was I would listen to what she would play me the next song she wanted me to learn, and then she'd leave, and then I'd go right back to the piano and try to pick out what I just heard. And so I never learned to read, and I basically faked it for about 8 years. And it's a long time to fake not reading.
Totally.
And so one fateful day, she caught me just looking at the wrong page completely, and she stopped me and she said, start right here in the middle of the song, and I couldn't do it. And I was like, I can't read that. So now I was 13 at the time. And she said, well, you probably shouldn't be in music anymore.
And wow.
And because, you know, if you think about it from the teacher's perspective, here's a student you've been working with for 8 years who's not developing in the way that you're trying to develop them. And so, and you're also knowing that anywhere he goes to try to pursue music, whether it's in school or another, a choir, a band, or another private teacher, he's going to have to learn how to read, you know, to do it. And that's just, I'm a horrible visual learner. I'm just not wired that way, but I am wired for sound. So I can play anything I hear. And so there was this big disconnect in traditional pedagogy versus all these different learning strengths that we all possess. And so it was just very, very, way too much narrow in the scope of how the teacher could train me. So I get why she was frustrated. I get why she said, this probably should be the end of the road for you. So I did quit like everyone else. And throw my books away in anger. And a couple of days later, I'm back on the piano. I got nothing to play. I couldn't read the books anyway, so it didn't matter. I started plunking around and just come up with stuff that sounded good to me. And that was the beginning of my creative pathway. And so there was all these different modalities I was discovering on my own inadvertently and unknowingly as I was trying to figure out my place in music. Got reinvigorated for learning, tried it again at the university level. So I went to Colorado State University. And I was like, you know, this is it. My calling is music. Ran into the same issues, exact same issues. I was frustrated with the professors. I'm like, I don't learn this way. Can you teach me a different way? They're like, no, you got to learn this way. This is how we do it.
Were you conscious? Because I really relate. I mean, I remember I had two guitar teachers growing up. I had my teacher when I knew I was going to go to music school. I had my serious teacher that was a Berkeley grad. I was trying to get into Berkeley. Right. And he was teaching me kind of like the pedigree that you're talking about, where it's very rigid. It's very, you know, let's read the scales out of the Mel Bay book. Let's do that. Yeah. And then I had this other teacher, thankfully, that was just the music teacher in my public high school who was a guitar player. And we would sit down and I'd bring my guitar to school and he would teach me like chicken picking licks and bluegrass licks and country licks. And I'd watch what he was doing and he'd make these little iPhone videos. And I'd go home and I'd watch the video and I'd hear it and I'd play along. And I learned so much faster. I didn't like, to me, it was like, I like this guy. This guy is harder is what it felt like. Were you thinking I don't learn that way? Cause that's not, wasn't at that level of thinking like, well, I just don't learn this way. Were you sort of understanding that that's just not the way I'm going to learn music
That's a great point. So to what happened with you is that the way that the other teacher taught you, yes, you're watching him, but you're really listening to him. And you're really, this is, if you think about how we experience music every day, it's not by visual. It's you put your ears buds on and you listen to music. That's our comfortable medium in music. It's listening, it's aural learning. And so when it's removed from that and put into a visual kind of a static piece of music, there's a lot of challenges that come with that because that's not the way that we interact with music every day. And so what your teacher did that was just showing you licks and stuff was perfect because then that allowed you to bring your natural musical experience to the table. He's not telling you to read the rhythms on the page and, you know, stay with it. You can hear the rhythms. You know what it's supposed to feel and sound like. And then what happens is the less that you're being locked into instruction booklets, which I call the sheet music, the right. more you're in that, and then the more you can unlock your flow. And that's why it sounded so much better, because now Zach's in his music versus, you know, the rigid sheet music. Yes, you're executing that, but are you in that? And, you know, for so many students, the answer is no. And so for me, to answer your question, I didn't know what I didn't know. I thought that I was the square peg. You know, and I was like trying so hard to conform and to say, this is how everyone does it. I need to do it this way. And I just kept beating my head in the wall going, I can't, my mind is just resisting this. It's so much easier for me to just hear it and learn it than it is for me to read it and learn it. And so I, you know, struggled through about 3 years of that. And I said, I can't do this anymore. Like this is going
to at music school. You actually went to a music college, music university, and you were struggling and trying to learn.
Yeah. And I felt that they were really trying to kind of squash my creativity and who I was as an artist as well, because, and I've got a whole different story about that, but I reached a crossroads and I said, you know, either I'm going to keep battling this and who knows where it's going to lead, probably somewhere bad, or I'm going to just pull the eject button and get out of this whole situation and just stay true to myself. And that's what I did. And I ended up dropping out, finished my degree in biology actually. Cause my mom's a nurse and, you know, it's a safe occupation, right? But, you know, once I graduated, I was completely miserable and depressed. And I was like, I don't want to do anything with this, you know, bio degree. I want to go do music. So, I was like, well, I'm in the middle of Colorado. What do I do? Flip the coin. Heads was New York. Tails was LA. Land on tails. Got in the car and drove to LA with no plan. Like, I'm just going to go. That's
totally. How I got. And did you think like were you trying to become a piano player at this point? You were frustrated with the education system, but were you still set out becoming a piano player?
So I determined that I wanted to be a film and television composer because I did a little project with my friend up in the university who was an artist. We did an art project where I got to score his paintings. We did a whole story of paintings, kind of like a, you know, a movie with stills kind of thing. It's really fun. I loved it. I loved every second of it. I was like, this is my calling. I want to do this. So yeah, so I just kind of picked up and took off, and whole other story. But basically what I discovered out there, and I had some decent success out there. I scored for a couple of the Newport Beach Film Festival stuff, did a little bit of work with IMAX, but it's a very, very difficult industry to get into when you're a composer for film and television. It's a 1% of 1%. It's very small.
Right, totally.
And it's feast or famine. It's brutal. So along that whole journey, I got talked into teaching again. Now, I had taught when I was in the university, but I taught how my teacher had taught me. Here's the books. Here's how you read. Play the song. And I was burnt out of teaching probably within the first couple months. I was like, this is boring for me. My poor students, they're bored out of their mind. They like me, but the lessons are just like brutal.
Right, totally.
So I didn't like teaching, actually. It's so funny, so ironic. I was like, I'm not a teacher. I'm not meant to be a teacher, you know? So out in California, when I got talked into teaching again, I said, you know, I wonder if I could teach a student to learn the way that I learn music and to connect to music the way I connect to music. And I just started trying things. I started experimenting, thinking outside the box. Sure enough, these kids were thriving in these new little methods and little techniques I was trying. So I was like, oh, this is really good. So my wife and I built a whole school in Orange County around this new method of learning, which encompasses multiple modalities, depending on whatever the learning strengths of the child are. Look, if you're a phenomenal visual reader and you can play music like you're typing a paper, we can take you on that path. But if you just want to listen and get all the information you need by just hearing and play it, we can take you down that path. If you want to create your own music, be, you know, compose and improvise, we can take you down that path. So there's all these different pathways that we started to stretch the boundaries of pedagogy and said, we have to accept all the different learning types out there and connect them to music in the way that makes the most sense, in a way that's the most effective, and they'll see the most progress and also have the most fun. And so that was our method right there. We just kind of developed this whole thing, and the school took off.
Okay, yeah. Wait, so a kid would come to you, and I guess step one is sort of, I guess, diagnosing what type of learner they're going to be for music. How'd you figure that out for them?
So we have a whole bunch of really fun games that we play with the kids that we can determine. It's kind of like our assessment test. We can determine pretty quickly what type of learner you are, and then we can get you right into the learning the way that is your strength. And so this is what's so powerful about, like, let's say the first time student comes to us, and we'll literally say, okay, we're going to be with you for about 20 minutes. You're going to be creating your own music. You're going to be improvising and jamming with us, and you're going to be learning your favorite song in 20 minutes. And they look at us like, you know, okay, you know, and then we do it. And they actually, you know, because that's how fast the method is. It's very, what's so special about what we do is that we actually tap into your musical experience. And everybody has a tremendous amount of musical experience. Everyone has music in them. We are inundated with music. We listen to it every day, exposed to it every day of our lives, basically. And it's totally like listening to a language all day, right? And you listen to music, it's just the language you're hearing. But here's the problem with people and their experience with music is they never get to know the meaning behind that language. Yeah, so it's like you're like a channel with a different language you don't understand. You're just running constantly all day. It's like, but different, obviously, because it's much better sounding. But that's kind of how people experience music, is they imitate it. They imitate sounds all the time, right? We all just sing. But we don't know why all that works. And so what's kind of behind those we have three pathways, eye, ear, and creative. What's behind those three is what we call fluency. And fluency is exactly what it sounds like. It's the understanding of that language. And so it is so powerful that our students that have been in our program for probably about 2 years on average can now listen to any song on your iPhone, and then they'll know how to play it before they sit down. That's the difference between fluency and ear versus just an ear. You know, a great ear player, as far as you know, can just hear something and go find it.
Right, totally.
Yeah, the fluency piece, which you know from your studies, you actually know what the relationship between those notes before you even sit down, you know, or pick up your guitar. And so that is so powerful to teach a student, because that just unlocks, it's like liberating. It's like now they can do anything. And so we started seeing all that in the school, and we saw the impact it had on these kids. I mean, we know from research, right? There's just a treasure trove of research on the benefits of music education on a mind, cognitive, emotional, social. There's even civic benefits. Like music learners, they vote more, they're more involved in their communities, they volunteer more. Like all this research is just like the promised land. And the parents know this. This is kind of household knowledge, right? Parents know that music education is so
good. Totally. You better be playing Beethoven in the crib if you want your kid to
go to
Harvard.
That's right. You know, like Mozart, right? Like, I'll just let's expose our kids to music, music, music. And then they get them into lessons, right? And then after the first couple of weeks, the kid's like, poof, you know, they hit this wall. Like, this is not even fun. Like, I don't like this. And then that frustrates the parents. They're spending a lot of money on the private teacher, you know, if they can afford it. Or maybe it's at school. The kids have choir, band, and then the kids are just like, I don't like learning music. It's not fun. I love music, but I don't love learning it. It's just not fun. And it doesn't speak to my strengths. They don't know that, but that's what I'm seeing as a teacher.
So right.
Talk about some of the, we're going to kind of the problems of music education. So what we saw in our school, we said, okay, we have this special thing, with this special approach. We have incredibly high retention. We have incredibly high engagement. We have incredibly high output of tremendous musicians we're turning these kids into. But that's a very small bubble that we're working with. How do we get this thing on a massive level, reach as many kids as we can? And of course, the answer is you better put it on a software platform. And so I tried this the first time. My first attempt at this failed miserably, just so you know. I had to cut my teeth on this. So I got a co-founder, he was an engineer, and we kind of tried to, you know, automate our classroom experience to software. And we had mixed results. So the teachers in the schools actually really liked it. They saw a new way of learning, a new way of connecting to their kids. But the kids themselves were like, you know, meh, it's all right. It's all right. It's like, it was educational software. So it felt like educational software.
Totally. So, yeah.
Right. Like, so they don't want to, kids that are at school all day, they don't want to go home and now do more education. They want to play like Roblox, Minecraft, and Fortnite. So that didn't work. So we said, okay, we got to start over from scratch. We have the right approach. We always know the approach, the method is very, very good. We see it every day. But the product wasn't right. Okay, so then I started another project. I said, okay, let's start with a full-on game. Let's just build a game that's so fun that it would stand on its own two legs, you know, on its own merits. And then we'll bake in all of the secret sauce of our teachings inside that game. And so that's what we did. We went and partnered with Leviathan Games out of Boulder.
An incredibly reputable gaming company, right? Like,
oh my gosh. Yeah,
Lord of the Rings and
Pirates of the Caribbean.
Pirates of the Caribbean, yeah.
Skylanders, you know, they worked with Blizzard on Skylanders. So yeah, this is an incredibly talented, brilliant team of senior level developers. And they know how to build great games. And so, because that's what I needed. I couldn't just get a couple of engineers to try to take my vision and make it into a game. I needed guys who knew how to build a game. So the very first meeting we had with Leviathan after they came on board was a music lesson for the entire dev staff. And this was hilarious because these guys never played an instrument, right? But I said, okay, within an hour, you guys are all playing your favorite songs. And they're like, yeah. Seriously, within an hour, they're all playing their favorite songs. And they're like, what just happened here? So they had to drink the Kool-Aid, right? They had to see it and feel the method to know how to properly gamify it. So that was our first several weeks of just teaching them music and teaching them the method.
Now I'm curious to just go back for 1 second. So when you're in the school and you're you know teaching students in the school, the number one thing a music teacher says is practice, 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 right? Of course, like, oh, you're not practicing enough. When your method was working at its peak performance, were you still, you know, yelling at kids for not practicing, or were the kids just consumed in the music that they would just go home and practice naturally? Like how does the amount of time they spend with the instrument change when they're learning in the way that's tailored best to them?
Excellent question. So as a teacher, I always tell the parents, look, if I'm doing my job, you'll never have to tell your kids to practice. That's really it. If I'm connecting the kids to music in the way that they need to be connected, using their learning strengths, their creativity, and we're tailoring it to what they enjoy the most, you won't have to ask them to practice. And, you know, most of the time that is the case. Sometimes, you know, some kids do really well with routines. So we just have to set up a routine, but I don't ever like to put a time on it. And I certainly like it to be intrinsic. You know, if I'm getting them really excited in lessons, it's usually the thing with teachers. So this is kind of like my next crusade is to work with teachers, because when you are teaching just traditional, with mostly heavily visual, the problem with that is that it's like building Legos and only using the instruction booklets, right? And you never get to dump those pieces out and just build your own stuff from scratch. And you know, from watching our kids, that they love to do that, right? That's very creative. They're so proud of that spaceship or that, you know, little dollhouse that they built because it's them, you know. Or think about art, right? If kids only did paint by number, right? Does mom do that? You see those framed up on the wall anywhere? No, because they're not in it, right? So music is, this is what music's really lacking at the early stages, is creative development. How to get, and I don't want to misspeak here. I am a huge fan and advocate of anyone who's teaching music. What I see the problem is that they're way too limited on their skill sets on how to reach these kids. You know, just like I was, right? Just like I was when I first started teaching, I was very narrow focused on, okay, you have to do it this way. And I was having little success. And so with the teachers, like if they can bring creativity into the lesson plan, what does that do? That makes every lesson unique and different and exciting. You never know what you're going to get. And when you get that kind of excitement built up as a teacher, it's contagious. It goes right to your students. And now they're fired up and they're excited. So now the lesson's like the best lesson ever, right? So this is where I think that teachers really need a spark, right? They need this creative spark. And a lot of teachers would love to teach creativity. They just don't know where to start. And so that's our whole method is kind of, the core of it is creativity. And so, you know, that's where I think we really need to start to break through the mold and say, look, that what you're doing is very good, but there's a lot that we need to add to that to really expand your abilities to reach these kids.
Totally. Okay. So you're like, we need to build a game first. We're going to plug in our music learning on top. So you find this gaming company in Colorado, they're playing their favorite songs in less than an hour. And then what happens? Where's the conversation go from there?
So then the conversation is like, well, how do we take what you do in the classroom and build it into this game and make it feel like a game? Because the last thing we wanted to do was make it feel like ed tech, you know, where, okay, now we're going to do a problem and then you solve it, or, you know, put up some fun graphics around it, but it's still like educational. I never wanted this game to feel educational, because I wanted the high level engagement from the kids. And so if the kids just think they're playing a really fun game, they're going to be engaged for a long time. But everything that they do in the game is music based. And so we also had to account for all the different learning type, or not just the learning types, but also the different skill levels that different students will bring or players will bring to the game.
Totally. Right? I was playing the game last night. I downloaded it on my phone.
Oh, did you?
I was customizing my character, and then I was following that dog, and I was doing ear training. I was like, oh man, 4 years at Berkeley. I hope I get my do re mi right.
Yes, so you're kind of seeing already like how we're trying to sneak in all of our training, like, you know, ear training through combat. You know, like you have to block those notes by listening, or else you're going to take damage. And there's the high level of incentive to really listen critically and say, oh, I want to get that note right. Those are kind of some of the tricks that we built into the game. If you keep going a little bit further, you'll get to the crafting, which is entry into composition and creativity. So you know that's in there. There's actually five different developmental tangents or verticals that the game teaches. But let me talk really quickly about the adaptive engine that Leviathan
built,
because this thing is fascinating. I couldn't dream of something like this for our game. So what they did is they took all these different developmental pathways that we have. Remember, because we have to connect to different learning types. So we can't just say, hey, every player that plays the game needs to go down the same tunnel, the same pathway, because that we'd be going against really what we stand for. So the game is built with these different developmental pathways, and they're independent of each other. So wherever you spend the most time, you can develop down that tangent. But if you go somewhere else, it'll pull you back to where it thinks you should be, and then develop you that independently as well. So the adaptive engine's always trying to position the game as very fluid, and it positions itself underneath the hood around where it thinks you are developmentally. And that is fascinating technology. Like, that's very close to AI as I can think of without being AI, you know? So that's what the game does. So if you notice, like, if you're getting perfects every time on the fragments or on the songs, you'll notice that the fragments start to increase in difficulty. And they just will get tougher and tougher, and they'll keep pushing you until you get to about 70-80% success rate. And then it'll kind of slow down the accelerated process. So So that whole thing is just fascinating. And so we started building this game, and then, you know, we have so much more we need to build, but we have kind of the game engines we're really focused on for the MVP. So it's not the, you know, it looks fine, but, you know, the graphics could be better, obviously. But we focused a lot on the game engine, the actual gameplay itself. And that's where I think they did just a tremendous job.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for listening and hope you're enjoying the show. Some of you may know that I run an industry newsletter called the Nashville Briefing. Really takes you to the front row of everything happening in our industry. And if you want to learn more about it, you can go to nashvillebriefing.com to subscribe. Also, if you're enjoying this show and specifically this episode, please feel free to give us a 5-star review on your podcast listening platform. Thanks so much. Now back to the show.
Okay, so how do you get the head of Guitar Hero involved with your company? I mean, I played your wife.
Yes.
I mean, I remember waiting. I think I always knew I wanted to play guitar. I was playing saxophone before I picked up a guitar. Mm-hmm. And I remember Guitar Hero coming out for Wii. I had Nintendo Wii. Guitar Hero 3 was coming out. And I remember waiting in line at Best Buy. It's the only time in my life I ever waited in line for a video game to pick up Guitar Hero with my mother, running home. And I actually remember we picked up a Guitar Hero and we got back in our car, drive back home, and our car battery died, like, for whatever reason. Aww. So we had to wait for like hours for AAA to come and like, and juice the car back up. And it's like, all I want to do is go home and play Guitar Hero. I mean, this game was huge. Obviously it was the biggest video game ever. How do you get this guy on your team?
Yeah. Sorry about the car breaking. That's probably torturous. You're sitting there with your brand new game. You're like, ah!
I know. I remember that so vividly. It was crazy.
So, you know, one thing my wife and I always talk about is just how blessed we are, you know, just pulling in the right people, attracting the right people. And it's not anything that we do. It's just, you know, it's just that when you're on the right path, then things tend to work out in a very special way, you know, and things, ways that we couldn't even explain. But my wife told me one time, she goes, didn't you used to teach a family in California that the dad was involved in gaming? And I mean, we're talking, now we're in Colorado, this is like 5 years ago. I was like, yeah, you know what? I think you're right. And she kept, you know, asking me, hey, have you called him yet? I'm like, I'll get to it. You know, I need to, for all the men out there, listen to your wives, my goodness. So I finally said, yeah, okay, I'll reach out to him. And I did. And he said, I have just the guy I want to introduce you to. And he set up this introduction. And within minutes of talking to this guy, like, my hand's shaking because I realized who I'm talking to, right?
You had no idea.
I had no idea who he was.
At first, yeah.
And then once he started like telling me who he was, I was like, oh boy. Not only is he a former executive of Activision Blizzard, but he's also the creator, the mastermind behind the whole Guitar Hero series, which was, by the way, a global phenomenon. That game was the biggest music game ever created. So, and here, right, I'm trying to create a music game. So I'm thinking to myself, this is ridiculous. Like, I have no business talking to this man. But he saw what I was doing. He saw how passionate I was. I was referred to him through a trusted friend. So he just kind of took a look at this, and over time, you know, we developed a very good friendship. You know, he's an amazing person by himself. I mean, he's humble, he's helpful, he just wants to help people. And these are the kind of people that are just in the stratosphere, you know. And you're like, this gives me hope, right? When I watch someone like that, and, you know, and he's become a mentor and a dear friend of mine. So he's been opening doors that, as a startup, as a founder of a little startup, I should never be walking through.
Totally. But, what kind of doors is he opening, or what kind of advice is he giving?
Well, he is opening the possibility for us to put our product in GameStop, Best Buy, Target, and Walmart. And that's before we have any, we're pre-rep. Like, we just entered into the market. So, you know, usually this takes a couple of years, build up traction, build up some numbers before you can approach these.
Totally.
Guys. So that's obviously one, just his knowledge, of the gaming industry, his knowledge of how it all works is just invaluable stuff. You know, it's just, and just being a great advisor and just, you know, helping me through the problems I experienced as a young entrepreneur. Not knowing how to, I mean, I'm a music teacher. I'm running a gaming tech company, for crying out loud. Like, what? Like, you know, so I am making a lot of mistakes along the way, but I'm also avoiding a lot of mistakes because of his experience. you know, and so he's kind of helping me, guiding me through this whole process. So he's been an unbelievable asset and addition to the team. And we certainly wouldn't be where we're at today if it wasn't for him. Now, that being said, I just got to speak to the whole team in general, like back to attracting the right people into the group. We have a tremendous team, excellent people, just great people on their own. But now they're so skilled and they're so talented and everyone's got buy-in now. Like we're all like, we got to get music into the world in this major, massive way. We got to connect all these kids to music. We see it. Like, this is the thing. Like we took the game before COVID. We took it to an elementary school, our prototype, and we had the kids literally line up and start battling enemies on the keyboard one by one. And Zach, you can see it on their face when they left, they were beaming with confidence, beaming with the belief that they could learn music. And that was so powerful for me, just watching that, and for the teacher that was there, just seeing that and seeing that spark and that excitement again. So one thing we're gonna do for the schools is, if you're a music teacher in any school in the US, you get our game for free. Just take it, use it in the classroom. Cause we know they could use this game in so many different ways, right? As a reward, if the kids do what they need to do and they're focused and motivated, then we'll play, you know, the game at the end, or as a supplement, you know, to the state requirements that teachers have to adhere to. So there's just a lot of ways they can use a game like this to ignite that spark for music learning again.
Totally. Now, I want to keep talking about the game, but I'm just curious, how come, you know, there are entire nations, like I think most obviously Sweden, which is just so known for music development with their kids in that country. Uh-huh. Are they taking approaches that you're talking about? Do you see them taking similar approaches to music education than America is? Like how come Sweden is such a hotbed for musical artists?
That's a really good question. I like Musician and some of these great apps, right, that come out of there. I think that they are very good at thinking outside the box. You know, I think that they're trying different things. For me, what really encourages me is that for the last 15 years, I've been kind of building a method that goes antithetical to the traditional way of doing things. So yes, you know, there's a lot of overlap with, you know, some of the fundamental components of music, but there's so much that is expanded in what we're trying to do. And so if you think about, like, the number one music teacher in the world right now is YouTube.
Totally.
Right? Like that.
If you still learn on YouTube. Like, right? If like I'm trying to figure something out.
So think about how that works, right? So someone, you know, I want to learn this song by this. Okay. So you see someone playing it and showing you how to press, you know, it's imitation, right? It's like, play these notes, get your song, and everyone's happy. But where's the meaning behind all that? You know, where is the true musical development of all that? Or is it just a quick little fix? Like, I want to, you know, play the song. And so what you're seeing is such an appetite for music playing outside of the traditional channels, right? Because the kids, they try music lessons, they drop out, but they still want to play music, but they don't want to take lessons. So where do they go for that motivation? They go to other platforms. And so things like Musician and these other learning apps are trying to, you know, kind of enhance that whole process of, okay, well, yeah, you can go to YouTube, but you can also come to us and we'll give you a little bit more, you know, musical development behind it. What separates Keys and Kingdoms from all of that is that we started with a game. Like we gamified so much our learning ed tech that we can penetrate the gaming market, right? That's never been done before, where we have literally crossed over industries. We have a foot in each. And so when we market this, parents, we look at this and going, that's going to teach my kid music. And then kids are going to look at that and go, that's a fun game, you know? And so that's the sweet spot that we're in. And that's what I always wanted for this game. I didn't want kids to think of this as, you know, more practicing or, you know, I got to go learn music now. No, you're going to go in this adventure. You're going to be going questing. You're going to be doing all these fun little mini games and, you know, and all of it.
You're going to save Harmonia.
You're going to save Harmonia. You're going to battle back the waste. And, you know, and the whole time you're developing as a musician, like real musical skills. And that was the other thing that was really attractive to Brian, our advisor, was that, you know, this is a game that actually does translate musical skills into real life application. He always wanted that for Guitar Hero, but we know that Guitar Hero's experience stopped when that console turned off.
Well, I remember hearing interviews where they were saying they kept trying to get the feel of playing guitar. That's what they were able to capture, was you felt like you were rocking out. But I remember hitting a wall and being like, I remember a hard stop playing Guitar Hero when I was like, oh my God, if I put half as much time into actually learning guitar, I could actually play guitar. And then I stopped playing Guitar Hero and I asked my parents for a cheap guitar and then, went from there. if half the time I spent playing Guitar Hero was spent learning guitar, I'd probably be 10 times better.
Right. Well, it's a lot easier to press a big colored button when it tells you to. Then
you get the calluses and
orient the frets and the six different strings, because that is a whole different, that's a huge jump, right? And so and Brian and I would talk often about the future spinoffs of Guitar Hero. So they did Guitar Hero Live, which is try to be real guitar. They tried
drums, which was kind of the closest thing.
Drums, vocals. They tried all that. They even tried DJ Hero at one point. Like, so there was all these like spinoffs, but Guitar Hero captured the magic. That was the one that really captured the magic. And then there was too big of a jump technically from a guitar controller with big colored buttons to an actual fretboard. It's too big of a jump for most people. Like, some people did it. Like, I absolutely know friends that got inspired to play the guitar. So it's not saying that it never happened. It did. But for the majority of people who play Guitar Hero, that was just too big of a jump. The great thing about Keys and Kingdoms is we're talking about a keyboard controller first, and anyone could go to a piano and press a key and get a good sound.
So
the technical hurdles or there's very few barriers into music playing with a keyboard versus any other instrument. You played a lot of instruments, so there's a big technical challenge when you pick up some of these other instruments: woodwind, string, brass. These are you can't just get a nice sounding note out of these things.
Totally. Part of my frustration, it was getting the tone alone was impossible.
That's right. Just getting a nice tone took a lot of time and practice. So but then also the advantage of a keyboard is that this is where you really can build up fluency and how music works, because it's a linear, set of half steps. You can see patterns really clear. You've got two independent musicians in one person. You got a right hand and a left hand. So now you've got the full musical picture of melody, harmony, and then rhythm in both. So that is the best way for you to really start to understand that language and gain that fluency. And then, by the way, once you get it there, you can apply it to any other instrument. And
what I was going to ask.
Yeah. We're going to be building a new instruments in different kingdoms for sure. But we want to make sure that we're building up that understanding, that fluency piece in the players early on.
So everyone's going to start on keyboard. Is that your idea? Is keyboard the best instrument to start on, just because you can see music
1,000% in that
linear sense?
Just from those very things I just mentioned were the, first of all,
tactile ability to play it.
That's right. Easy entry into technical playing, get nice sounding notes. Independent parts on right and left, so you can get the full musical picture. Prolific, like multiple notes at one time, so you can actually play a whole bunch of notes at once, where a lot of instruments can't do that. And then also the range of the keyboard. No other instrument has a range like that. So this is all these wonderful reasons to start there. But then I always tell our students, we always encourage them to take that knowledge and expand out into other instruments or even singing, wherever they want to take it after that, because they have that knowledge now.
Totally. So what am I think frustrations with my musical development is I think this is pretty normal, but you start out, five chords and you learn another five chords and your chord knowledge is doubled. Like, now I've totally plateaued. Like, for me to feel like I'm making a big leap in music is so rare. I feel like at this point it takes so much effort and work. It's like, what else do I learn? Not that I know everything, of course, but it feels like to really take my ability to the next level, it's so hard. The early gaming that I was playing with last night was obviously geared towards an early musician, but is this the kind of thing where can I be waiting for Keys and Kingdom Advance, where I'm going to be having, insane motor lyre training and all that to push me through? Or like, how do I keep pushing my musical ability over when I already have some level of proficiency?
Right. So great questions. And one thing we noticed with, when we were testing, the early students on this game is that the parents were starting to hover behind the kids. And then they asked us, hey, can we try that? That looks like fun. Like, Absolutely, because you know, music play. This is a game that actually can bring a family together. Like, you know, mom and dad. You know, we have for one subscription, I think you get like three accounts. So brothers and sisters, or mom or dad can even have their own character and play and have fun. But one thing that that you asked about, the development, how far does it go? There's no. I'm sorry, my children are moving chairs around upstairs, and sorry about that.
Don't worry. They're making music. It's all good.
I tell you, that's a sound. It's a note.
What is that? B flat? No.
Yeah, exactly. There is no end to this. You know, there's no end to the runway. And so right now we're building up the next levels, you know, underneath the hood. But that's going to take a player all the way to independent right and left hand, intervals and chords for harmony, obviously changing position, melody on the right hand. And then this is going to keep going on and on. But the thing that, to answer your question about hitting that plateau, and I get this a lot, especially from musicians that are outside the keyboard, you know, because what they teach you, like, let's say for guitar, I mean, I've never met musicians who know more about chords than guitarists. I mean, they're like chord libraries. Right? You know, just amazing knowledge. But one thing I've always noticed is that how you connect all those chords into a meaningful big picture is sometimes more challenging, you know, and it's the, I always tell our students, I say, you know, this is really, sounds really funny coming from a teacher, but notes don't really matter that much, you know, and those notes don't matter in music. But really what I mean by that is it's all about the relationship between the notes. So if you want to hear something and know exactly what it is right away, you're not listening for the note itself. You're listening for the relationship of that note in context with the other notes around it. And once you get, and you know this natural number system, right?
Totally. Yep.
One chord. So you're right. When you say one
chord, he doesn't matter. Relationship between.
It's all about the relationship. You're listening for that relationship in the song. Oh, that sounds like a two chord. Oh, that sounds like a five chord. So once you have that, the relationship down, you can execute that at any home that you know. So, you know, usually we want to play it in the key that the song's in, but we don't have to. We could move it to any key if we want to sing it.
Right.
So that whole developing the relationship of notes and harmonies is so critical to early development, getting players to understand those basic concepts early on. We're talking 5, 6, 7-year-olds that understand some pretty heavy theory, but we don't dress it up that bad. Right? We connect it in a way that's really easy for them to understand. And so that whole, like, that is such a key piece and helping, it would help someone like you to kind of break through that plateau and to really accelerate again into your music learning. Because it's not that, oh, I'm stuck here, you know, and to try to lift off from here is going to be very difficult. It won't be, because you already have a lot of abilities. It's just connecting what pieces that you need to kind of expand your knowledge of what you're doing. And then just, how do you like to learn? You know, that's always my big question.
Say it again, because I'm really interested in this now. So are you saying the best way for me to learn would be to learning more the relationships between the notes, or having that finer, you know, dialing in on that specifically? Is that what you're saying?
I'm thinking about 1 hour with you, and we'll have you breaking through that plateau. Yeah.
Okay. We'll set that up.
I've got my teacher hat on now, right? So I'm kind of looking at you going, okay, you got a lot of abilities. You got a lot of knowledge and background. All you're missing is a couple little things, and you're off to the races. Yeah.
Very cool. Okay. Yeah. So the game is in the App Store. You can go download it. You can order the keyboard online. So if you're listening, if you're tired of entertaining your kid during COVID, you know, the product is there to purchase and use. I was using it last night. What should we be looking out for? What can we get excited about coming forward?
Well, so some of the new features that we're testing out are our pop songs. So of course, kids want to play their favorite pop songs.
Totally.
We're also setting up these in-game like performances in front of an audience so that kids can feel like rock stars on stage. So that's going to be a really fun new build. We are overhauling our crafting system to make creativity even more fun and exciting. We're adding in new islands, new quests, new bosses. We're basically just going to keep pushing the content because that's, you know, we have to stay ahead of our early players. So we'll always be updating. And that's why we want to do the subscription. So it's just one flat rate, you know, which is a fraction of the cost you pay for music lessons. It's like $10 a month, basically.
Totally.
Right, for like you know, for all the content we ever add in that game is just going to be for that one price. And so, you know, we want people to try it out for free first and just see how the game's trying to teach your child, see if your child is excited to play and wants to play it. And that'll tell you all you need to know about the game. And then while, because as parents, we want to feel, we don't want to feel guilty about all the screen time we have to give our kids these days, because there's nothing else for them to do.
Right.
I know I do with my children. And so this is a game that you can allow them to play and not feel so guilty about, because you know that they're getting real music education as they play.
Totally. Are your kids playing, I'm assuming? They're the beta test, right?
Oh, they were, yeah, they were my beta testers all the way throughout. My son is just, you know, he just loves it. He was really frustrated in the beta round, because I had to keep resetting his character back to the beginning. So he wasn't too happy about that. But yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, they're my litmus test. So if they're having fun and they love it, you know, then I know I'm on the right path.
Now, what do you practice when you're trying to improve on your instrument, or do you even have time to improve on piano right now?
You know, when you raise four children under the age of eight and you have two full-time jobs, yeah, a little tough to find my own personal time. But when I do have time to sit down, I just love to just improvise. You know, I just love to just create whatever I'm feeling in the moment. This is like what I love to pass on to my students as well, is the ability to just sit down and create music from scratch. Music that just sounds like real amazing music. You know, you think that it's a song, you know, the way that it comes out of these kids. But they're, you know, unless you had a trained ear, you wouldn't know that they're just improvising on the spot. So that's what I love to do. If I learn a song that I've heard, then I always want to put myself into that song. You know, that again, that's where the ear and the creative pathways intertwine. And so it becomes more, I have more ownership of that song. You know, it's got my style, my flow in it. So that's kind of what I love to do. And, you know, I can't wait for the day that I come back down to one job so I can actually have more time to do those things. But, you know, right now I'm on a mission and I feel so blessed to be able to do it.
I love what you're doing. I mean, music education is so important to me, because I was a horrible student in high school. If I didn't go to music college, I don't know what I would have done. I spent all my time playing guitar and playing in bands and playing music. And I mean, music totally changed my life, and we need more people playing music and yeah, learning and staying out of trouble. So when Beth told me about what you guys were doing, I was like, oh my God, I mean, what a cool product. What a cool idea. I wish I had that when I was a kid. I probably would have, stuck with keyboard or whatever. And who knows, I'd probably be, you know, in Carnegie Hall somewhere. But
I tell you, look what you're doing now though. See, so it's funny like how life works and all our experiences lead us to where we need to be. And you're doing amazing things. You know, when you're in the industry, you're working with artists, you're helping to bring more music to the world, great music. You're a connector. You bring, you know, the right pieces together. You're getting the word out on your podcast. So, you know, those are all tremendous things, you know? And so I wouldn't say, hey, if I would have done it back then, because you're doing some awesome stuff now. I think we're all been given gifts. And I think that when we use those gifts, for the betterment of everyone around us, I think that good things happen. And I, you know, I'm a living testament of that, you know, with the people that we've been able to bring in. So, just thank you so much for having me on your show and
giving me thanks for coming on.
Anytime. Love
so,
to come on.
So the product is Keys and Kingdom. The site is actually mellowquest.com, if I'm not mistaken, right? If you want to learn more.
Keysandkingdom.com.
Keysandkingdom.com. If you want to learn more, keysandkingdom.com. And you can read all about it and check the whole thing out.
Yeah, we're on. So if you go to the Apple Store and just search Keys and Kingdoms, both plurals. And then if you want to go to the website, it's keysandkingdoms.com. That's how new we are as a startup. We actually had to transfer our web domains over.
So got it. Okay, yeah.
Pretty new. And then we're hoping to be in the stores in the fall. So you might be, awesome. You know, and we're definitely trying to onboard music teachers. So if you're a music teacher out there, at a school, you know, contact us, let us know who you are. We'd love to give you a free license and let you try out the game. And then if you like it, you can use it with your students. We think it's going to be a really powerful motivator in the classroom.
Can't wait to see it. Unbelievable. Yeah. Well, Graham, thank you so much for taking the time. This was fantastic. I might hold you to that music lesson.
I would love to just give you a few little things and you're gone. Like you're just.
Let's schedule it. That would be unbelievable. stay well in COVID, and hope we get the chance to meet in person one of these days soon.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it. Thanks, Zach.
Talk to you soon.
Bye. Okay, buddy. Bye-bye.
Thanks again for tuning in, and thanks again to Graham for coming on the show. This was such a cool episode. And if you got kids at home and they're bored, Keys and Kingdoms, it's in the App Store. Download it now. Check it out. The Zach Kuhn Show is mixed by Sam Heyman, and our theme music is by Justin Johnson. If you want more content from us, you can subscribe to our newsletter at NashvilleBriefing.com, or you can follow us on socials, everything at Nashville Briefing. Thanks again for tuning in, and we'll see you next week. Bye.